We see a lot of energetic blockage to healing. That's what we like to call it, that there's something preventing this person from catalyzing their next step in health. And you can look at, and that energetic block, you can describe it from 10 different perspectives, like the traditional Western psychology perspective, from like a biopsychosocial model, from an energetic model, from a shamanic model, yeah. You know, entities and astral fragments and, you know, all those sort of things.
Welcome to the Warriors at Work show. This is Gina Coomber, your guide and host. This is a show for men and women in the workplace who want to move from the predictable to the potent. This is your weekly dose of inspiration with an edge. I talk with CEOs and shamans, sports marketing executives and therapists. All of us are like-minded thinkers and doers who tell stories, share wisdom, and challenge each other to have the best life possible inside and outside the office. Welcome to your Warrior Conversation. Everybody, thank you so much for being here with me. It's Jeannie, and welcome to the Warriors at Work show. Well, this is a very personal conversation you're about to listen to and watch. And I was motivated to reach out to these two functional doctors because not only have I been working with a functional doctor for a number of years, which has helped me really get out in front of my health, I started to scratch my head and wonder, why are so many people around me getting sick? What is going on? It's bigger than COVID. It's bigger than the pandemics. It's bigger than a lot of the limitations we've had to endure the last almost 2 years now. I really wanted to understand what else is there beyond the really important acute medical care, and thank God we have access to that, but what else is there? Is there more we should know about our energy, our bodies, our relationship to our symptoms? How do we listen to ourselves or not listen to ourselves? And why do we so often outsource it to other people to diagnose us? So I started looking around and seeing who are those people that are doing this work. And I had the amazing opportunity to meet and talk with Dr. Emily Rowe and Dr. Christopher Estes. They're husband and wife based in Miami. They're doing this work every day. They are medical doctors that left a traditional medical infrastructure, if you will, to create their own practice. And they talk about some of the coolest modalities that I didn't know anything about. But their philosophy is really how important it is to listen to your body, tuning in, listening, and advocating for yourself instead of giving up responsibility, which a lot of times we'll do. And working more in partnership with what your body is telling you and recognizing there's lots of different tools and modalities that are available to you to help you get back to your optimal self. So I thought this would be a cool conversation to set us up for 2022 as we're beginning a whole new year. And like all things that I put out here, this is in service to all of my incredible warriors so that we can have the best life possible inside and outside the office. So I hope you enjoy this. I hope this offers you some wisdom and some ideas to take back control of your health. Be well.
So tell us more about things that you bring into the patient's experience.
Why don't you talk about that, Chris?
Sure.
Why don't you talk about ozone and IVs?
So, I mean, obviously, once we kind of figure out these root causes, like, you know, infections and toxins and, you know, allergens and lifestyle things, we're going to talk about all that stuff. And we use nutraceuticals, of course, you know, different kinds of supplements and binders and, you know, detoxification approaches. And they're all unique, like and herbs, of course, tons of herbs. And I may use medications, too. So, like, depending on what's appropriate, I use medications as they're needed. But like the kind of things that are a little bit different that we do a lot of IV therapies. So intravenous infusions of vitamins, different kinds of nutrients. One of our favorites is phosphatidylcholine. Phosphatidylcholine is a phospholipid, and it helps to repair damaged nerve membranes. So for people with cognitive problems, brain fog, fatigue. It also works in the liver to help the liver detox, and it seems to be very good for hormonal problems like PCOS, endometriosis, things like that. So it works kind of all over.
It works amazing. Gets rid of the hot flashes.
We do a lot of hormonal stuff too. So there's a lot of things we do around hormones. And PC, the phosphatidylcholine, seems to really help with hormonal issues. I think that probably also has to do with the fact that it's suspended in something called deoxycholic acid. So like you can't just give a fat in an IV. It'll come out of solution and cause trouble. So you have to suspend it in something. And the stuff that it's suspended in, which is not the primary component, actually nourishes your gallbladder. So your gallbladder is part of the key to recycling detoxification capacity specific to hormones and other things that are fat soluble. So you basically help to flush out the gallbladder.
Also helps with cholesterol balance cholesterol is recycled through your ileum and your gallbladder. So
in addition to this neurological benefit, you can get like a mega gallbladder flush, if you will. It helps recycle your bile acids, and then that is part of what detoxifies, buildup of the less healthy hormones, as we like to describe them.
Wow.
Another
that's
one.
So big, interesting.
Cool stuff, right? And that's how all these things work. It's like, okay, I'm going to give you, alpha lipoic acid. That's another. It's an antioxidant, but it supports detox, and it also helps remove heavy metals. And it works on neurological problems, and it also helps people with diabetes. So it's like everything we're going to use. It has multiple functions. It's not like one problem, one drug. It's always
alpha lipoic acid is pretty magical too. I had a lymph node like on my neck that was the size of a golf ball when I had cancer. And my first dose of IV alpha lipoic acid, it shrank by 50% overnight. Like I couldn't believe it. I was like, Chris, look at this.
I had done a course to learn how to do IV, a course on IV therapies. And I had just learned about alpha lipoic acid. And I was like, they use this for cancer.
And it's not a cure. It's just a strong antioxidant. So it's just, it really treats at the root cause of what's going on.
So we've seen some amazing responses with these things. My other favorite shotgun is, oh, I'm sorry, you were going to say something. Go ahead.
I was curious because you made mention of the fact that you sometimes will prescribe medication, I should say. Sure. So do you find that there's instances where you're partnering with their primary healthcare physician?
Oh, we have a lady who's 89 years old, has pancreatic cancer, and she wasn't responding to chemotherapy or anything. So she started coming in to see Chris for high dose vitamin C IVs, and her oncologist and Chris worked together, and this lady's doing amazing. Her tumor markers are dropping. And I mean, we thought, oh, we'll just improve her quality of life, and let her pass more peacefully. Oh my gosh, this lady, she's like,
she's cantankerous again.
She's doing great. She's doing great. Like her cancer is actually reversing combination with
she's doing
conventional
chemo too.
She's
doing other conventional medicines. And I'm not the sort of person, we are not the sort of people that are like, oh, you're on these five medicines. You need to stop them today and start these tomorrow. That's actually a very bad idea. Often people will come in and say, I'm on these medications. I would like to stop them. That's another common consult we get. And I was like, okay, we can work on that. But we have to transition. Like you have to say, okay, we're going to, start with these root causes that we can identify. We're going to try to improve them. And then we're going to take away things one at a time, slowly taper off. Because, some people may need to take medications, and that's okay. But we always weigh the risks and benefits and say, okay, is it worth the risk that this medication poses versus the benefits that you're actually getting from it? And if the answer is yes, okay, it's worth the risk, then you take it.
I think that's so important to highlight. It's not like get rid of everything and just do what we're saying. It's all about partnership. And it's really how you treat is you're meeting the person where they are in their most authentic, kind of clear, grounded self. Like what's the most optimal health solution for you? Yeah. And I think that's really, really important to highlight.
Oh, yeah. No. And this lady at first she was doing conventional chemo and it wasn't working. Now it's working with the addition of the other stuff. And we'll have patients who have Lyme for example, and they've been treated with multiple rounds of antibiotics. But when we combine it with herbs, the antibiotics work much better because you're less likely to develop antibiotic resistance and stuff like that. So I think it's really important to have mutual respect for different modalities and not like the us versus them mentality. I think it's just harmful.
Yeah, I agree. And we refer to people who are specialists, like, you know, if I think you need an evaluation by, you know, a spine,
an MRI,
and then you need to go see the spine surgeon just in case, like, yeah, please, you know, or like, oh, it looks like you have, you know, please go get your mammogram, you know, like if it's appropriate. We can talk about risk and benefit of that as well, depending on what people want to do and, you know, all these other things. There's no need to, you know, so trite to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? It's like, there's good stuff in medicine too. In conventional medicine, there's good stuff there too. It's just that it works better when you combine it with everything else that we do.
Why don't you tell her about ozone? This is another modality. And then Acutonics.
So yeah, blood ozonation. I don't know if you've ever heard about blood ozonation, but this is a process where we site an IV line and we draw your blood into a single-use sterile jar. And we then expose your blood to ozone. And ozone is a special form of oxygen. Ozone is O3, oxygen is O2. And it rapidly dissociates from O3 into O2. It's very unstable in the environment. If you've ever been near a lightning strike, that smell in the air, that's ozone. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what ozone does, as we do this process, is it actually catalyzes a reaction in the bloodstream that improves production of ATP, which is your body's energy currency. So it improves energy production. It improves the health of the mitochondria, which are making the ATP. It's antiviral and antibacterial, plus it supports your immune system. So basically it gives your immune system like a little poke, kind of wakes it up. It does this through a process that forms a compound called lipoxides. But basically it's a little dose of oxidative stress, and like a little dose of oxidative stress is a good thing. Like exercise is oxidative stress too. So we give you a little dose of that, and it sets off a chain reaction inside your body that's useful to treat a very, very long list of conditions. As a matter of fact, pretty much anything that affects your mitochondria is served well by treatment with ozone. So I like to call it, it's like a shotgun treatment. It kind of treats a little bit of everything. So because it's not the ozone that's necessarily doing the job as much as it is the ozone stimulating your body to do what it's supposed to do.
So let's talk about the mitochondria, because I'm thinking about all the people that are listening and watching. You know, it's a lot of executives in corporate America. It's a lot of entrepreneurs. It's a lot of business owners. And my guess is that word is going to resonate. So say more about what it is, how it works.
Sure. So
how stimulated, overstimulated.
Yeah, I mean, mitochondria are really interesting. If you look back through evolutionary biology, mitochondria were actually beneficial bacteria that we went into a symbiotic relationship with. And they actually have their own DNA, and you get your mitochondrial DNA from your mother. But now we become dependent on them, they're dependent on us, and they're not even like a separate entity. They're part of us now through years and years of evolution. And this is in all mammals that we have mitochondria. And, you know, what's interesting is if you take antibiotics, because mitochondria were once bacteria, they're mitochondrial toxins. And, you know, I mean, most people that I know throughout their life have taken 20 rounds of antibiotics because you get a sinus infection, you had an ear infection, this and that. And it does do.
Strep throat.
And I'm not anti-antibiotics. Like, you need, if you have strep
throat,
you need antibiotics. Otherwise, you end up with rheumatoid heart disease. So it's super, rheumatic heart disease. It's super important to treat infections. But there is, like anything, a risk benefit. Toxins tend to affect mitochondria as well. Most toxins are fat soluble, and in chemistry, like dissolves like. So all the stuff that we're exposed to. But the main symptom of mitochondrial dysfunction is fatigue, because it's what makes your energy. So, you know, and there have been studies that show that if you do exercise, it actually stimulates your mitochondria to divide and reproduce and expand their numbers. But, you know, it has to be like on a regular basis. If you go to the gym, you know, every day for a month, you're just going to be tired. This is like, I'm talking like years and years, like professional athletes, I really feel like they have superior mitochondria to the rest of us. But is that a good summary for you?
That's a very good summary. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, the mitochondria are like, you know, they live inside of the cell. They do a very long list of functions for our bodies. And anything you can do that improves your mitochondrial health is useful. And ozone is one of those that's probably its primary site of action. There's a lot of really good research on this that shows that it improves various aspects of mitochondrial health. And since you're improving mitochondrial health, your body's able to work better, and therefore whatever disease, quote unquote, you have, you know, will tend to get better.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, you know, a lot of vitamins are cofactors in mitochondrial reactions, as the mitochondria make your ATP and generate energy. And so, for example, I have a lot of people who have 2 cups of coffee in the morning, green tea all day long, and then a glass of red wine at night. And both coffee, tea, and alcohol are vitamin B1 depleters. And so they end up deficient in thiamine. Like, thiamine deficiency, we were taught in medical school, is associated with, you know, only alcoholics. And they end up with this severe kind of mental disorder that's called Wernicke-Korsakoff's encephalopathy. But when I do nutritional tests, tons of people are walking around with these B1 depletions because of just that kind of lifestyle, that go, go, go.
And I'm smiling because what you just described in an average day is very common.
It's
for a lot
common.
Of people that I know.
And I was one of them
included.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And so this is where I find like nutritional testing is really important, because I'm like, oh my God, I'm not even giving my mitochondria the nutrients it needs. You know, and I'm not saying don't have the cup of tea or the coffee, but you might need the supplement in addition. And you don't know unless you actually do the labs and see it. And I find a lot of my clients, if they have the lab that shows they're deficient, it actually will change behavior outcomes.
Then
you're like motivated to see the change and stuff like that.
Well, I also think about myself included in this category. You know, the people that I'm in service to are business professionals. They're a lot of times they're A-type, they're driven, they're very ambitious, they like surveys, they like assessments, they like to see things in black and white. And when you see it, it's one of those things, once you know it, you can't unknow it. So now you have some choices to make on whether or not you're going to do something different with it. But it's interesting, because my brain also goes to, they're going to want to score better the next time we do the blood. Like, I think of myself, I have my follow-up next week. When I went to get my blood work, I delayed it for a month because I was like, well, no, we've moved. That's not going to be an accurate depiction. I want to show progress. And my husband looked at me, he's like, but it's an actual reading of time. I'm like, yeah, but it's not accurate.
It has to be
real scenario. Pardon?
I get that, because, you know, you don't get through med school unless you're a little neurotic and, like, you know, type A and driven. And I personally love labs, and I have patients who come in and don't want to do labs. I'm like, well, then what the hell am I treating? Like concrete information.
Yeah.
I don't just, you know, get a download and do muscle testing and tell you what to take. And now maybe for some people that has validity, but for me, I like something very concrete that shows what's going on, and we can look at pathophysiology and then change the outcome so you don't end up with a chronic debilitating disease.
So, you know, but if we're going to treat energy, we do it different.
Mm.
There are some things we do that we don't need the labs, or we don't bother. I mean, the labs are useful, and we always keep them in our minds and stuff, and we integrate them into our whole picture. But, you know, when we're doing things like Emily mentioned, acutonics.
We do a system of sound healing where you put tuning forks on acupuncture points. And it's interesting, the acupuncture channels run in collagen. And collagen, if you look at the physical structure of collagen, it actually has a crystalline structure. So and collagen is what holds us together. It's connective tissue. And collagen has this very special property in physics called the piezoelectric effect. And what that means is that when you press on it and you use mechanical force to induce a conformational change, you release a flow of electrons. And a flow of electrons, of course, is electricity. And wherever you have a flow of electrons, you generate an electromagnetic field. And this is like physics that everybody learns in high school. But but to actually apply it to the biological system. And so this is where the sound comes in, because you have the vibration affecting the collagen and resetting the whole electromagnetic fields of the body. And, you know, your heart is super special because it generates its own electrical impulse, you know, 60 beats per second. You have this like spark, this fire, this electrical impulse. And so your heart actually generates an electromagnetic field, and this can be measured. That's what EKGs are. And then the other thing you can measure, right, is the EEG of the brain, the electroencephalogram, which, you know, if somebody's having seizures or strokes, conventional neurologists will do that. But that's where the sound healing can affect this kind of stuff.
Wow. So cool. Because, you know, everything that we've been talking about here, so you've been able to marry your medical expertise with a lot of really Eastern medical philosophies, practices, proven thousands of years old, with a lot of additional newer modalities. So you're also meeting people where we are in our lives today, based upon a lot of historical information. But you're also, you've got healing in here, a little bit of shamanism in here, which I absolutely love this. I guess I'm so deeply grateful that you're both doing what you're doing in the world. I'd love for you to zoom out for a second and think about functional medicine as a whole and where we are going as a society. What, you know, when you're looking out into the future, what do you see and how do you want to influence that future?
I would love to see more mutual respect upon between the different practitioners, you know, and like even like, we didn't even mention this, but I got certified in hypnotherapy over this summer. And it's so powerful for people to be able to become masters of their own mind so that these repetitive self-sabotaging thoughts don't occur over and over again. It's one of the most effective ways to develop new healthy habits, like quitting smoking, stopping gluten. But there's also too often like traumatic childhood events where people feel like they're not worthy of being well. And that's where that taps into. But for me, the bigger picture would be like, I would love to see like functional medicine doctors working more with acupuncturists, working more with ozone, and just like truly integrative medicine, which I don't see.
Yeah. That sums it up pretty well. I mean, but there's such structural issues in our healthcare system. And this is a global problem, to me. And it really just has to do with the way, things are set up and run and the way people are indoctrinated into the system of medicine, whether it's, you know, a physician, a nurse, the PA, the nurse practitioner, you know, whoever, like anybody in the conventional medical system, you really are indoctrinated into a system. And that system is rather rigid in its beliefs. It does not move quickly. It moves very slowly. It is also beholden to financial pressures from other things, that other entities and things that are not directly related to the benefit of your patient. Very diplomatic way of me saying that insurance companies and drug prices and things like that are really what drive a lot of physician behavior.
But I think hopefully one of the silver linings of COVID 19 is that people are going to realize the limitations of our healthcare system and how bad it is and how much it needs to change on multiple levels.
Yeah, so that sort of sweeping change, you know, could I imagine a system where, like what Emily described, you know, our medical Shangri-La, like could we do that?
I love that medical.
Oh my gosh, he's such a humanitarian.
I know,
he
sure.
really is.
Oh, I've got triple Aquarius in my chart.
I always say you can't polish a turd, but
that's the difference in our charts, you know. It's like
I'm the pessimist.
Exactly.
He's the optimistic humanitarian.
Could I imagine it? Could I see it? Sure, I could see that. But you know, Because, I mean, if you look at, and just to speak very briefly, because I know we're talking to the C-suite here, a lot of your clients, they understand this, your audience, they understand this about the financial pressures of, well, how do we do this, right? Like, how do we get this job done? And I was the CMO of a couple organizations, so I know I've been in those shoes, you know, where you have to think about those things. When you look at a lot of these treatments we talk about, they're not necessarily any more expensive than anything that's done in conventional medicine. As a matter of fact, a lot of it's cheaper. A lot of it's cheaper. And as a matter of fact, if you really do the economics of it, you could make this whole preventative system cheaper for the entire populace if there was a motivating factor to actually do it. But I don't see it yet. I don't see it happening. So for now, like, that's why we're really outside the system, because the things that we do and the way that we practice and the way that we take care of our patients, you know, just is not compensated inside of the system, because we couldn't run our practice if we had to see four or five patients an hour, like most doctor's offices do. And I was in that system for years and years and years, and I would come in and you have a docket of 30 patients. That's your day, 30 people. Like, okay. Well, and then you've got someone behind you who's like putting their hand on your back saying, you've got to see more. You've got to produce. You've got to get this work done, man. And
RVUs.
Yeah. The relative value unit. That's how they measure your performance, by what you do. Like, you know, every little, you know, unit of work that you do is measured and observed. And like, that's part of how you're compensated in lots and lots and lots of practices these days. So that corporate end of medicine is squeezing everyone. And I'm not just saying, it's not just the doctors, because then the nurses feel it, and everybody feels that. It's not just the doctors. You know, how, if you don't relieve that pressure and actually give that person some time to sit and think about what they're doing, rather than just, you know, follow what's the established protocol for X problem, which is what you have time to do, along with all the charting and documentation you have to do. It's awful hard to sit down and really get to the bottom of these things, plus give yourself the time to educate yourself about how it all works. Because all this is, I mean, Emily and I spent thousands of hours learning
this stuff. Yeah, and when you first get out of medical school, you're so burned out. Like, you can't even imagine learning something new. But last year, each of us spent $30,000 on continuing education. And that was, everything was
I'm
on.
I'm glad you highlighted that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you highlighted that, because you're both in class every week.
We are. Constantly.
Constantly learning.
We spend thousands and thousands of dollars on our continuing education.
But I love it.
But it's fun. For us,
I mean,
we have a good time
care.
With it.
I don't even like think about the cost. To me, I'm investing in myself and my business and everything.
I'm curious too, so you're married, you're both healthcare practitioners, you're in practice together. Do you ever see things differently? And how do you resolve differences of opinions? Tell us about that.
It's easy. She's always right.
Oh, Chris.
Simple.
How do you resolve it? Like, when you're dealing with a case or a situation, how do you come to the best possible outcome?
Well, I mean, it is complicated being married, working together, being, you know, like work partners. But underneath it all, we have deep mutual respect for each other.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I mean, that's really a lot of it. But I also think that it's important that there's not a single truth. You know, when I work with a patient, I hold multiple paradigms in my mind at the same time. So I have the functional medicine paradigm, the acupuncture paradigm. There might be like a hypnosis kind of like subconscious mechanism at play. And there might be something energetic going on. There's genetic predispositions, and they can all be right at the same time.
Mm.
Yeah.
I always liken it when I'm engaging somebody for the first time and I'm being brought in to work with a leader in an organization. It's like, I work with what I see, what you're telling me, but also what you're not telling me. And how do I unearth all of those things to really help you bring out your most effective self so that you can have the life you want? You're both doing the same thing.
We see a lot of energetic blockage to healing. That's what we like to call it, that there's something preventing this person from catalyzing their next step in health. And you can look at, and that energetic block, you can describe it from 10 different perspectives, like the traditional Western psychology perspective, from like a biopsychosocial model, from an energetic model, from a shamanic model,
yeah.
entities and astral fragments, and all those sort of things that you might have. And then what's really wonderful about
sometimes too, it's just karmic. It's something
life
that
or
somebody
karma in your lifetime, which you
needs to experience in this particular incarnation.
And are they willing to ask themselves, why am I experiencing this? What does this mean? And most,
that's such a great point, Chris, because one of the things that I'm always scratching my head about, and I said this when we first started, is why don't people ask themselves the tough questions? Why do they just put the responsibility of their health on other people? We would never do that. I work with these really ambitious people every day that are constantly plotting their course. They're all about their career trajectory, their success, their titles, their visibility, and all that's great. They would never outsource, I don't think, or maybe they are in a lot of cases, outsource their health to other people, or maybe they're doing it too much. I can't figure out why. What is it? What's the block?
I think that it requires, Carl Jung, who's, very famous psychologist, he had this concept of the shadow, and you need to delve deep into yourself and look at deep mechanisms. And it's scary. It's scary to do that kind of shadow work to see, how am I self-sabotaging?
I mean, I can speak for myself that it's easier to not look. It's easier to not look. It's harder to look. And it's harder to try to understand. Like, that's the hard path. It's easier if you just put it on the back shelf and just, whatever, it's no big deal. Oh, it's not important,
But I agree with you, Jeannie. I would never give somebody like the password to my bank account or say, here, take my Amex. Here's my American Express.
And tell me what I should be doing with all of my money, my income, all of my worldly possessions. Just tell me what I should do.
Yeah, but that's what people want. And that's what they've come. But, it's a mutual cycle. Like,
I mean, we have a financial planner. I trust his advice, but ultimately it's my decision and my choices. And we'll have like a conversation about risks and benefits. What are your options? And we do a lot of options counseling. When somebody's diagnosed with something, we'll be like, well, here's five options I can think of. What do you want to do? And maybe they do two out of the five. Maybe they do all five. Some people, we never see them again.
Exactly. Here's your five options and they never come back.
So, that's their choice. And I always encourage people to get another opinion.
But I think that part of it is the way that people expect the medical system to work. You expect to go to the doctor and the doctor fixes you. I'm going to lay on this table. You're going to put me to sleep, cut me open. I'm going to come out a new person. I'm going to lay in this chair and you're going to put some chemotherapy in my arm and my cancer is going to go away.
But I don't think the younger generation is as much that way.
Well, it depends on the person.
Yeah, it does. You're right. It
depends on the person. Some people are, some people aren't. Just like with the older generation too. Some people are, some people aren't. Yeah. I think people are waking up more to this. And really, I think it's just a matter of how much personal effort they want to put into all of the above. I mean, for a long time, I was convinced I didn't need to do it. I didn't need to do that work. That wasn't for me. I'm okay. And then I realized, wait a second here. Yeah. I don't have,
obese, hypertensive, his cholesterol was terrible, estrogen was through the roof.
Exactly. I can't really work out that well. And I've been taking antidepressants for 10 years. I'm like, this isn't good. I need to fix this. So I was like, I went on my journey, or I didn't go on my journey. I'm still on it.
Let's bring it off. If we were well, I just kind of laughed because I'm like, well, I'm better than I was. I'm not dead.
Exactly.
So I'm winning.
Still here. Well, let's bring it all together. Cause where I want to close out the conversation is we have covered so much in this conversation, and you have said this in a lot of different ways, is really empowering people to look at themselves with a lot of honesty and love and compassion. and tune in if they think something is off, not to ignore it, but to actually honor it. So I'd love for you to just riff for a second. How would somebody get into action? So if anybody's listening and watching it, and maybe they fall into the category like, hey, I just want to get in front of my health, like I was. I'm not necessarily having any major symptoms, or something's wrong, something's not right, I'm not really getting anywhere. Where does someone begin?
That's your question.
So, I mean, you know, a good functional medicine provider that you resonate with is a great place to start. I like to refer people to IFM, Institute for Functional Medicine, ifm.org. Of course, there's us, you know, we're Miami Beach Comprehensive Wellness Center. You could always come see us, you know. We do much better in person than virtual. Virtual is very limited what we can do. And I do encourage people to have someone local. Like, it works better when you're in person. Other thing I think that's really important is to really be honest and open about what your symptoms are doing. I think men have a bigger problem with this than women. I know, because I am one. And we tend to minimize things and like not pay attention, not dismiss the little things. One of my favorites, this is a good example. There's this great guy, his name's Dadis Karazian. He's a chiropractor, but he's like functional medicine chiropractor, functional medicine doc. I've learned a lot. We've learned a lot from Dadis.
He's very smart.
Very, very smart. He's written some great books. Like, anybody with thyroid problems, you should read his thyroid book.
And he wrote a brain book.
Brain book is great too.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Clear mental cognition.
Exactly. He's a great, great writer, good teacher. But he said something in a talk I listened to once that was really hit so true. He said, you know what? After you eat, the only thing you should feel is not hungry. After you eat, the only thing you should feel is not hungry. If you feel tired, bloated, acid reflux, a headache, like I want to go to bed, like I just, you know, like I got a skin rash, anything that's not hungry is abnormal. That's a problem. There's something wrong. What the something wrong is could be a very long list of things. It could be a lot of things that are wrong. But if you eat and feel anything that's something that's not hungry, there's a problem. Maybe a little problem, maybe a big problem. And how many people do you know go out and after they're done eating, they're like, oh my God.
Yeah, I need a nap. And here we are coming up to Thanksgiving.
Yes. That's
this
bad.
Time next week, we'll all be, I need a nap.
That's really bad. Also, you know, just fatigue in general. I'm just getting old. No, you don't have to be fatigued when you're old. And no, you don't have to completely lose your memory when you're old. I'm just forgetting things. No. I lost my sense of smell. Now, I mean, everyone's aware of sense of smell now with COVID because it's a COVID symptom. But like, you start to lose your sense of smell or things don't taste the same. That's a serious neurological symptom. It's an early sign of serious neurological problems.
Usually the first sign of Alzheimer's. A lot of people have it for 10 years before they actually get diagnosed with Alzheimer's or Parkinson's.
I lost my sense of smell 10 years ago and then I wound up with dementia. It's like, no, like if you lose your sense of smell, that's like brain injury.
A problem.
It's a problem. And so like a lot of people will blow things off like, oh, it's no big deal. You know, I get these rashes,
insomnia.
But I put some cortisone cream on it and it goes away. It's no big deal. It's like, well, you know, that's a big deal. So, you know, pay attention to even the little symptoms but you have to be able to go to a provider who understands how to work up those little symptoms. Mm-hmm. Because if you go to the conventional folks, they're just going to go, it's not, you're not dying. Get out of here.
Like, well, you know. And you know, actually a good acupuncturist and an herbalist, you know,
yeah,
functional medicine was created based off of Chinese medicine. So they actually looked at the Chinese medicine patterns and the web of interactions. And that's how they created functional medicine. So it's almost like a mirror.
It's
kind of funny.
Yeah. A good acupuncturist herbalist is a really good place to start too. I can't necessarily recommend like, okay, you should check these labs because like that's so highly individual. I don't like to say, oh, you should definitely do all these things. Oh, you should definitely do a stool test. Oh, you should, you know, definitely, you know, do your genetics. It's like, well, there's a million ways you can do these things. And it's really best if you're going to invest the money in doing those sort of tests, it's best to have someone guide you through it to say, okay, what makes the most sense for us to start with? go from there.
We don't believe.
I'm glad you used the word guide too. Your guides, your Sherpas, your activators, your also great role models. And I love your style being so heartfelt, so straightforward, simplifying the complex, but having such a mission of creating wellness and better lives for people.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Warriors at Work show. If you are interested in learning more about what we do at the Warriors at Work show and platform, be sure to go over to my website, Jeannie Coomber, and subscribe to my monthly Warrior Playbook newsletter. I share everything that I'm up to month by month, as well as some lessons and insights that I've learned. I'm also interested in hearing any feedback you have about this conversation or future topics. So reach out to me directly on jc@jeanniecoomber.com or on LinkedIn. Be sure to tell your friends and your colleagues about this Warriors at Work conversation. Subscribe, review, and rate us. It's the best way to get this message out into the world. Be well.